In March 1964, a New York woman named Catherine Genovese was stabbed to death as she returned home from work late at night. According to a newspaper report published shortly thereafter, 38 people had witnessed some or all of the attack, listening to the cries for help for over 30 minutes. The people did nothing to stop it. At this news, the nation was shocked and outraged at the callous indifference of these 38 people. This is the famous incident that triggered the study of what is known as the Genovese syndrome or bystander effect, which says bystanders have a tendency to be indifferent as a group. Let me ask you, how much responsibility or guilt lies with the bystander who listens to the cries of help but does nothing? The Bible seems to find the sin of omission just as serious as the sin of commission. In the story of the Good Samaritan, Jesus insinuates that the priest and the Levite who passed by the man beaten and robbed were as guilty as the robber himself. Indifference is often described as the opposite of love, not hate. I hear that neglected children many times misbehave to get their parents' attention, because apparently negative attention is better than no attention at all. The Bible seems very clear. Do not be indifferent. We're talking about indifference today. And the Bible says, don't be like this. Care for others as much as possible. If you are self-centered and that is hindering you from caring for other people, then deal with it to the point of sacrificing that part of yourself, dying to self and denying that self in order that you may live out the calling of God. Defend the fatherless and the widows. Fight for the oppressed and the poor. The Old Testament says that we should not be indifferent toward even the foreigners in our land. The New Testament says, love your enemies. Certainly, God has made it plain for us through the Bible that being indifferent is the farthest from God's truth to be lived out. So what do we do when we find God to be the one who is indifferent? What do we do when we think that God is being indifferent? It seems like the accusation of Habakkuk in the passage for today is what is recorded there. This in Habakkuk 1 seems to point God as the bystander who listens to the cries of help but does nothing. Let's take a look. Habakkuk 1, starting with verse 1. The prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. Is it surprising to you that this type of rhetoric is found in the Old Testament, where God seems to show up much more often than he does now? The parting of the Red Sea, fire by night, cloud by day, manna, Gideon, Jericho, Daniel's three friends in the fiery furnace, Naaman's leprosy, etc. The Old Testament seems to be full of God's intervention, right? So to us, God is very present in the Old Testament. And to find a prophet saying that God is not present, that he is so distant, is a little bit surprising. But in reality, it's true. The miracles of the Bible are a compilation of stories among millions of people over several thousand years of time. For most people, most of the time, even in the Old Testament, God seemed distant and silent also. Habakkuk sounds frustrated here and upset, and perhaps we resonate with him. He says, why do you make me look at all this injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Why are you just a bystander watching and listening for cries of help but do nothing? There's destruction and violence and strife and conflict all around, God. Why aren't you doing it? Why are you so indifferent? What good is your law, God, if you don't enforce it? It's a dud. The wicked are overtaking the world and the righteous are being crushed. Where is your justice? Is that how you feel sometimes? My heart is overwhelmed with sadness this week because Tammy, George and Sarah Markarian's daughter, died on Wednesday. She was suffering from cancer for several years, and it finally took her life. She was so young. And I can't imagine what George and Sarah are going through right now, because the pain of losing your child has got to be the most agonizing. That suffering is too much. And no doubt many who go through such immense suffering ask the question, God, where are you? God answers Habakkuk in chapter 2. But the answer you hear may not be very satisfying. Habakkuk says, chapter 2, verse 1, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. Then the Lord replied, here's his answer to our accusation of him being silent and distant and indifferent. This is his answer. Ready? Write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end, and it will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. I told you you wouldn't be satisfied. So if we were to ask God, Lord, how are we to endure your seeming indifference toward us? How shall we live through the suffering and the injustice? His answer through Habakkuk is, endure by enduring. Endure by waiting. The end will surely come at the appointed time. You may already know this, but the Bible does not give an explanation on why God seemed to be so silent and distant so many times. It doesn't. He just asks us to trust him and wait. And when all this comes to an end, that's when we will really have the answer. The writer of 1 Corinthians 13 says in verse 12, for we see now in a mirror, dimly, but then we will see face to face. There was no glass mirrors back then. Mirrors were made out of metal, and the reflection was very poor. It was very dim and distorted. And that's the only answer we have in this life, dim and distorted. But when the end comes, we will see face to face with crystal clarity. So we wait and wait and wait. And many times we get weary of waiting. It takes a lot of patience to wait, doesn't it? Especially for Seventh-day Adventists who herald the coming of the Lord. A Baptist church had a sermon sign out front that said, Lord, give me patience and make it snappy. Waiting for God can really try our patience. And like the 10 virgins waiting for the bridegroom, we get tired. There was a teacher who was helping one of her kindergarten students put on his boots. He asked for help, and she could see why he was struggling. With her pulling and him pushing, the boot still didn't want to go on. By the time she was on the second boot, she had worked up a sweat. She almost whimpered when the little boy said, teacher, they are on the wrong feet. It wasn't any easier pulling the boots off. She managed to keep her cool as they worked together to get the boots back on the right feet this time. This is when the boy announced, these aren't my boots. She bit her tongue rather than get right in his face and scream. Once again, she struggled to help him pull the ill-fitting boots off. He then said, they're my brother's boots. My mom made me wear them. She didn't know if she should cry or laugh. She mustered up the grace to wrestle the boots on his feet again. She said, "Now, where are your mittens?" He said, "They're inside the boots." That's why it was so difficult to put them on. Lord, give me patience and make it snappy. Let me talk to you a little bit about the significance of waiting and patience. Waiting is actually only a result of something else. Have you ever stopped waiting for somebody? You had a dinner appointment with a friend and you were there at BJ's until 7 o'clock. You waited whole 15 minutes and he didn't show up and you're like, "Bah, I don't like him anyway." I was waiting at a grocery line at Vaughn's not too long ago. There was only one cashier and a slow one at that. I was waiting and waiting and I said, "You know what? I can do without food." So I left the stuff there and left. We wait for things that are important to us, and sometimes we don't wait any longer. A bride waits for her husband who is at war and is missing in action, and years later, she is still waiting for her husband because he's the love of her life. We wait for things that are important to us. There's a story about a man who leaves his two children behind because he did not want to put their lives in danger for some reason. But before he leaves them, he tells them, "My babies, I love you so much, but I must leave you now. But I promise I will come back for you someday." Years later, this was in a movie. Years later, when he felt that it was safe for him to go back to his children, he finds them still waiting for them. Each day, wondering if that was the day their father would return. They never gave up hope because they knew how much their father loved them. To wait is to hope. The Hebrew word for wait is synonymous with hope. To hope in the Lord is to wait for the Lord. Also, to wait is to believe, because one does not wait for something they do not believe in. We don't wait for things that are not important to us. We don't wait for things that we don't believe in. Of course not. So when we wait, if waiting is the posture of our lives, then that shows what kind of faith we have within. When Hebrews 11:1 says, "Faith is the substance of things hoped for, evidence of things unseen," it's saying that even though God may seem distant and silent, even though there is no evidence that can be seen, even though there is chaos and suffering all around, faith does not give up on hope. And hope, when it's still alive, gives us the patience to wait. So the question remains, what do we do so that we do not lose hope? What do we do to develop the trust in God so that we wait with patience in the world of suffering? Is there something we can do? Yes, there is something we can do to strengthen our hope and our trust in God. And this is how we can endure the seeming indifference of God. You want to know how to do this? Do you want to know how you can survive this silence from God, this distance from God? When you cry out for help and he seems to be far away, do you know how you can endure this through this life and still cling to hope and wait? You want to know? Here it is. It's called relationship. It's always the relationship that builds trust. The children wait for their father because there was a trust relationship. I'll be honest with you. I don't like to talk about this concept, this relationship with God. And you may have noticed, I think this is the first time for me to mention it in at Vallejo in 4.5 years. And the reason that I avoid talking about this relationship with God is because I feel like it's a cliche. It's sort of a fad, and all the churches are talking about it. It's like the answer to everything. How shall we serve? What do we do? Well, you need the relationship with God, right? And goes in one ear and out the other for people that hear it. And that's why I don't like to talk about it. Another reason I don't like to talk about it is that this relationship with God is has become an excuse for not taking the call of God very seriously. Oh, God accepts me just the way I am. It's His love that counts. I know before in the past, Christianity used to make it hard for the Christians, and it was all about duty and obedience. But now it's about the relationship, His unconditional love. And somehow we have made the grace of God cheap. And that's why I don't like to talk about it. So for me to talk about this relationship with God today, I hope you can understand the level of seriousness as I say it. I certainly do not want you to think that I'm saying this because it's the answer to all. But I will admit today, it is this connection to God, this, whatever you want to call it, relationship with God, where our faith begins to flourish. It is in this relationship that hope begins to build, even when all seems hopeless. And we, whatever it takes to know God, it has to become our goal in order to begin to trust Him with our lives. It is our relationship with God that fuels this trust in Him. It is what gives us the patience to wait when there is no evidence of God's intervention. It is our relationship to God that will help us to endure His seeming indifference, because we realize just how much He loves us. This is what I pray for you, for me, that we are growing in this life with God, together with Him, that we are learning intimacy, that we, by faith, know that He is with us despite the lack of evidence. Amen.